Well, Allison, it's a pleasure to be here again with you, especially on this very week of iPhone Christmas 2015. How's it going for you?
Well, I am still feeling very jubilant. I am actually coming to you guys from my brand new iPhone 6S Plus due to a move. I'm still kind of setting up my podcasting rig. So here I am on some somewhat questionable Wi-Fi over Skype on the brand new space gray iPhone 6S Plus.
Oh, lovely, lovely. And you're sounding good to be on a space gray iPhone 6S Plus, but we couldn't expect anything else. I mean, it should sound fabulous, right? It's brand new and shiny and everything.
It's an iPhone, for crying out loud. How could it not be wonderful?
Exactly. So let's back up just a little bit, because this podcast is going to be all about our experiences with the new iPhone to this point. We've only had them a few days, so it's new territory for all of us, but we're so excited we just couldn't resist coming on and podcasting about it a little bit.
Yes, we are so excited, and we just simply cannot hide it.
We cannot hide it any longer. We must tell the world. So tell us a little bit about your iPhone getting experience. What was it like to get the new iPhone this time?
Well, it ended up being a really good experience. It started out a little convoluted. On the day that we were to move, that was the day that the pre-orders became available for the iPhone 6 Plus. It was actually the night after, the night that we moved. So I was having trouble with the Apple Store app. There was all kinds of stuff where it wouldn't honor my Verizon Edge. It wanted me to do their Apple Pay plan, but that would have required me to have to pay off the rest of my old phone. And so the next day, I actually ended up calling Verizon. They still had some phones in stock. I had ordered rose gold and Jeremy had ordered space gray. They had said that they would both deliver by October 7th. And I wasn't particularly happy, but I was like, okay, well, we waited, so we're going to have to deal with the later delivery time. And so Jeremy's phone actually shipped and delivered on September the 25th. I was just like, this is ridiculous. He can't just have the new phone. I need to see if I can get a hold of it on launch day as well, because I simply do not want to wait. I don't need rose gold that badly. And so I called around, and it turned out my local Verizon store still had some 128 gig 6S pluses. So I harnessed up the dog. I got in an Uber, and we trotted on down to the Verizon store and had a great experience. Ordered the 128 6S Plus that I think I may have bought the last 6S Plus they had. So I was extremely lucky, because at this point it was already 6 o'clock or 6:30 on Friday the 25th. So it was fantastic. I traded in my old phone. They shipped it back to Verizon. I didn't have to do anything. And now I've got my 6S Plus. It ended up being a really nice, painless experience.
Fantastic. I am so glad you actually got it, but I do have a question for you.
Sure.
If you got a space gray and Jeremy got a space gray, how are you guys going to tell them apart?
I know they look the same, and you know that's really going to make a difference to us.
Yeah, and what if you get confused and, oh my gosh, I can see this really being a problem here.
Well, and we could unlock each other's Touch ID too, so it could get
Oh, you've made it even more convoluted.
Right. Well, actually, we have different voices, though. He has Daniel on his phone, and I have Karen on mine.
So I guess it'll all work out somehow.
Yeah.
So you got it without any problem from the Verizon store, it sounds like. And I assume since you were at the store, they got it all going for you and everything.
Yeah, the activation was all done by them. And then I just set it up. I chose to set it up as a new phone because there were some problems that I was having. Some bugs that I found out are now related to iOS 9.01, which is the latest official release. Fortunately, without going into violating my NDA, these seem to be things that are fixed in the 9.1 beta, which I'm now running on my phone.
Well, I'm really glad to hear that they are fixed. And I've got a bit of a weird situation. I have the new 6S Plus Space Gray also, so I'm not going to be able to tell my phone from your phone. Boy, this is getting really complicated now. But at any rate, I have the new one, and I'm having an issue with mine. iCloud backup. My phone will not do an automatic iCloud backup.
And, you know, Jeremy's having some problems where his keeps saying that it's restoring from the iCloud backup, but it's been doing that for 4 days.
So. I think there are some problems with iCloud right now, because I'm hearing other people say they're having similar problems to what I'm having and maybe to what Jeremy's having. And so we'll just have to see how that all shakes out. Interestingly enough, I can do a manual backup. It has no problem. Has no problem. And I have signed in and out of iCloud and turned back up on and off and done all the things you normally do when you're having trouble. So far, it hasn't made any difference. So you might check and see whether yours is backing up.
Yeah, I do. I do need to check that. And I'm still having some issues both on 901 and 0.1 with call answering. I know Jeremy was having some issues. He's on 901 and his mom called and he couldn't answer it. It locked up completely and then he had to end up calling back. So there are still some pretty significant bugs. I don't know, you know, when iOS 8 came out, there were some pretty significant bugs that hit both blind and sighted users alike. My concern at this point is that a lot of the bugs that I've seen being reported are specifically affecting voiceover users. And I do hope that Apple will fill the open accessibility positions that they have right now, because it's kind of clear that although they have still produced a really great product and a really great version of iOS, there's still some work left to be done.
Yeah, and this is a little bit disappointing to me because this is kind of a release that's supposed to really clean a lot of things up and supposed to work really well. And honestly, I guess for the most part, I think it does. But some of these bugs are pretty inconvenient at this point.
Yes, they are. It kind of makes me a little bit nervous about El Capi 10, to be honest with you. I'm going to upgrade tomorrow and I may somehow find some way to record it because I'm going to try to upgrade over hotel Wi-Fi.
You are one insane woman.
I am nuts. I should really be locked away somewhere.
You are one insane, but it'll be a lovely thing to hear about once whatever happens.
Oh, and you guys will. Everybody will. I will tell the story.
I'm looking forward to it. What we're really talking about in terms of bugs are iOS 9 and not the hardware.
Right. The hardware is beautiful. The hardware is the fastest I've ever worked on, including faster than my iPad Air 2, which I didn't think anything could get much faster than that machine. Yeah, these bugs are purely software related. It does not seem to matter if you restore from an iCloud backup or an iTunes encrypted backup or if you set up as new.
Right.
I tested that for the good of the community.
Right. No, it doesn't seem to matter. Now, I would like to hear your opinion. My opinion still is, honestly, I am enjoying a lot about iOS 9, and I'm not sorry that I upgraded to it. I don't wish to go back to iOS 8 because the bugs aren't show-stopping enough for me. I wonder how you feel about it.
They were getting a little bit show-stopping for me, particularly the scrolling bug. But as I say, since I have updated to a beta version, that at least seems to have been fixed. But I was to a point with 901 where I could not use any Twitter clients on my phone because I could not keep my place. And I have not had a problem with that in a long time since Twitterific made their latest round of voiceover improvement several versions ago. So it was very disconcerting. And it wasn't a problem with Twitterific or Tweetings or any of the Twitter clients I've tried. It was an issue where any time you went into a large list of items in iOS 9, voiceover would not retain focus, at least not reliably for me. This bug, like all of the others that have been reported and widely circulated on Twitter, is not able to be easily reproduced by everybody. So it's really hard to track down, really hard to fix.
If you're sitting on the fence, still using something other than a 6S or 6S Plus, and you haven't upgraded to iOS 9, I don't know anything. I have no idea when, but I'm betting that iOS 9.1 will likely be out before too awfully long, just based on how fast they got 0.01 out and how quickly they seem to be working through the betas. So obviously, again, we don't know when it will be released, but I'm guessing it won't be too many more weeks away.
Right. And I can tell you from firsthand experience, it's going to be a much better overall experience.
So if you haven't upgraded to iOS 9 and you're a VoiceOver user, you might want to wait for 9.1. Of course, if you're like us and have the new phones, the S model phones, you have no choice. They come right running iOS 9. So you're going to have to stick with what's currently available. And it's not terrible, with the exception of some of those bugs, which, as you just pointed out, can be really annoying. And for some people, might be almost showstoppers. But I hate to dwell on it too much because I think it's temporary.
Right, it is. And you really have to think of your own individual situation. If you've looked at the list of bugs, particularly on the AppleVis site, they've done a decent job of logging the bugs that are remaining in iOS 9. But if you look at the list of bugs that are there and you find, wow, maybe I wouldn't be affected by this as much, then do not let that list of bugs scare you into not upgrading. I feel that we have to strike a balance between being realistic about what's going on and not overblowing the situation, because the situation and the issues that are presented by these bugs are going to be different for every use case, for every user of these devices.
That's part of what makes it so complicated, honestly.
Because you want to be real and truthful about what's going on, but you don't want to scare people needlessly either. And I feel like as a community, we are striving to do a better job at trying to strike that balance in terms of our high profile tech people. And I proudly include us in that list.
So I think enough said. I think we've made the point clearly. If you're just running something earlier than an S model phone and you can hold off for 9.1, you might just want to do that. I don't think it'll be all that long. There's some cool things in iOS 9, but it's not so radically different from iOS 8 that waiting a couple weeks won't really hurt anything, honestly.
I agree.
Let's get back to the hardware. I really love the iPhone 6S Plus. I think, honestly, I can already say that it is my favorite phone so far. It is really, really fast, and it's really solid. And by solid, I mean it's solid in the way that it operates, but it's also really solid in the way that it feels. This is a hefty phone. I mean, it's not too much, 20 grams heavier than the iPhone 6 Plus. So however you think about 20 grams, that isn't much weight, but it does feel a bit heavier. And it also feels more solid, I think because it's made from a sturdier aluminum.
Aluminium.
And it has different glass on it. It's a little heavier because of the 3D touch sensor that's built in, but it just feels like a very, very solid device to me.
That it does. I really love the feel of it in my hand. It's just a really nice feeling phone. With the 6 Plus, it was so light that sometimes I would be afraid of it flipping out of my hand and it dropping, and sometimes that did happen. But with this, I think there's way less of a chance of that happening.
The 6 Plus could have just flown away.
It could have gone flying on a particularly stubborn breeze, yes.
Yes, but I think the 6S Plus feels just heavy enough that it feels like it probably wouldn't do that.
Probably not.
Of course, it has another gig of RAM, has 2 gigs of RAM, which most Apple users probably could care less about these kinds of specs, but it sure seems to make a difference in how quickly things load and how often things have to be reloaded. There's just it just has a really great, snappy feel to it that especially if you should be coming from something earlier than the 6, if you're coming from a 5 or a 5S, you're going to notice a huge difference if you decide to go with this phone.
It's going to feel like a whole new operating system if you're coming from something like the 5 or 5S. It feels brand new practically for me coming from the 6 Plus. So it's going to be a whole world of wonderfulness.
So there are some differences in the capabilities of the 6S and the 6S Plus. Both the cameras, the front-facing cameras, now a 5-megapixel camera for your FaceTime and your selfies that you can't resist taking all the time. And they've actually used the front screen now for a flash. They have the screen flash 3 times as bright as normal when you take a picture with a front-facing camera if you need a flash. And everyone says that really, really works well. So nice new front-facing camera, 12-megapixel rear camera, and apparently it has really been enhanced in terms of the quality of the photos it takes. One cool thing about the new phone is that it's now possible to use a particular word, H-E-Y, Siri, which will cause Siri to wake up even if your phone is locked, unless you turn that feature off. But if you have it set to wake up on lock, Siri will wake up and do your bidding without you even having to touch the phone. And it doesn't seem to really have any effect, as far as I can tell, on battery life at all.
It's the most wonderful thing ever.
I think the feature that has probably gotten the most attention is one that I'm excited about, and I think it has some things to really offer VoiceOver users. It's fully accessible with VoiceOver. That is, of course, the new 3D Touch feature. What do you think about 3D Touch so far?
I really have enjoyed getting to play with it. I think sometimes I forget to use it because it's so new, but I've liked what I've learned. For example, you can 3D touch on the App Store. You can do a peek and the little context menu will pop up and you can just do a search. So rather than having to load the App Store and hope that the search tab will allow you to hit it and go to the search field, it simply then opens the App Store and takes you right into the search tab, which is really nice. I've heard some sort of conflicting reports on Twitter where people really like it, or they're like, I don't know where this has any use to me as a VoiceOver user. And my response to that is, it's early days. Apple is just starting to figure out what they can do with this technology in their own apps, and some preliminary third-party support is starting to eke into a few third-party apps as well. But I would say give it a month or two or 6 even. And I think 3D Touch, for the hardware for which it is capable and the apps for which it is capable, will revolutionize the way that people can interact with these newer phones. I really do.
So for people who haven't been reading all the articles and watching Twitter the way that we have, maybe we should try to explain a little bit what 3D Touch is and why it's unique. It's the first time that we've really seen, as far as I can remember, Apple make a significant advancement in the multi-touch touchscreen, honestly, since the iPhone 3GS, which was the first one that I started with. And the change that they've made is they have created a touchscreen now that is sensitive to the amount of pressure that you put on the screen. So the harder you press down with your finger causes different things to happen. And there are a couple different layers of hardness. If you press down only somewhat hard, you will get a context menu in some cases, or you'll get an opportunity to peek inside, say, an email message, or peek inside a text message. And what that means, honestly, is it just gives you a way to review the information without actually opening the mail message or without actually opening the text message. But then if you decide, well, based on what I'm seeing in the preview, I want to go ahead and open the message, you just press a little harder and the message opens, just like as if you had double tapped on it inside the mail app or the messaging app. That's one way that 3D Touch is used. It's also used to bring up some context menus if you use it on one of your apps on your home screen. And it's kind of like doing a right click or a Vo Shift M on the Mac if you're using VoiceOver on the Mac. I mean, that's kind of how I conceptualize 3D Touch. Anything you want to add to that or anything you see differently?
No, I think that's a really thorough explanation. That's what I've managed to glean from it so far anyway.
There are a few different ways to work with it, and not that I think we need to spend a lot of time detailing that, but for people who like to explore by touch, drag your finger around the screen and find apps, when you actually land on the app that you were hoping to find, that's when you can press down and invoke 3D Touch. But if you like to flick around the screen, you can actually flick to the app that you want, double tap, and hold. But when you hold, hold with a firm pressure, and that will also invoke 3D Touch. And if you use a Bluetooth keyboard, you can invoke 3D Touch with Vo Shift F. So there are several ways to access it, and I use it more, I think, by using Explore by Touch on the screen, but I don't know if that's true for you also.
Yeah, I tend, when I do the double tap and hold method, I tend to just, it comes out like a standard double tap and hold. I guess I don't press as hard, but when I'm exploring by touch, I'm a little bit more cognizant of, okay, I'm already on this icon, so I'm just going to push down a little bit harder and invoke the 3D Touch.
Well, it's a good point. We should say that figuring out really how hard to press to cause the different actions does take a little practice, doesn't it?
It does. And I find that even on the light sensitivity, there are three levels of sensitivity you can have the 3D Touch set at: light, medium, and heavy. And I must have a very light touch indeed when I'm interacting with the iPhone, because I find that even to invoke a peak, which is that first level of 3D Touch, I find that I have to press fairly hard, even with it set to light sensitivity.
Yeah, I was honestly a little surprised the first time I did it at how hard you have to press. But now I understand, the more that I've worked with it, that you want to clearly be able to differentiate between just a tap, a long tap, as opposed to a 3D touch. If it wasn't the way it is, I think it would quickly become very frustrating for people.
Absolutely, I agree. And I think that Apple have thought that through very, very well in terms of VoiceOver users.
I've got my phone sitting right here. I could try to demonstrate just a couple things using 3D Touch so people can
totally
actually get an idea of what it's like. So I'm going to just find something on my home screen that we can 3D touch on here and see if we can show you that right quick.
Watch. Okay. Double tap to open. Messages. 5 unread messages.
So I'm on messages.
Double tap to open.
And I'll just...
Messages. 5 unread messages. Double tap to open.
3D touch.
New message.
And now I'm in a little context menu after I've done it, which will let me create a new message.
Allison Hartley.
Or let me send a message to you, because you're in my...
Oh.
You're a person that I've recently been texting, so... That little context menu was something that we did not have before 3D Touch came along. And I just located the message icon again and did a firm press on the screen where the icon is located to bring up that little menu. We forgot to mention that, and of course we can't demonstrate this, but when you press down, you get some haptic feedback. You get a little vibration on your finger that lets you know that 3D Touch has been engaged. And if it turns out, as you will find, that you try 3D Touch on an application that doesn't yet have any 3D Touch capability, you get really fast, I'm not sure if it's a double vibration or maybe a triple vibration, but anyway, you get a really fast 2 or 3 vibrations that let you know that there's nothing to be done at this point with that app. So it's really great. I mean, it's very tactile, honestly.
It really is. I was surprised, and pleasantly so, to see the difference between the two vibrations. It's very clear as soon as you 3D touch something if you're going to be able to do anything with it or not.
So let me back out of this message menu by doing a scrub gesture.
Messages. 5 unread messages.
got my work cut out for me to read my messages, huh? And I think what I'll do is see if I can open the mail app here and show you one other example of how you can use 3D touch to preview a mail message.
Dot, nice. Mail, one unread email. Double tap to open. Mail, hi folks.
So I've got mail open here. Let me go to the top of my mail message. I think I'm inside a message here.
All inboxes, one, back button. All inboxes, search field. All in.
So now I'm just in my inbox here, and I'm going to locate a message, and then I'm going to 3D touch on it and let you hear the peek into the message.
3 of 3 Wi-Fi bar, mail, unread, HIMSN, Apple Hot News, OS 10 of Cap Titan available as free update tomorrow, 5:12 p.m.
Okay,
OS 10 of Cap Titan available as free update tomorrow,
Apple
OS 10 of
Cap Titan,
the latest
here.
Major release, actions available.
And what you're hearing there is the preview that automatically gets read when you land on a message. But let's try the 3D touch on it and see what we get.
Apple Hot News, OS 10 of Cap Titan available as free. OS 10 of Cap Titan, the latest major release of the world's most advanced desktop operating system, will be available.
Okay, that's what you get just by default. I'm still holding my finger down. I can slide it down the screen and probably get a little bit more information.
As a free update for Mac users, El Capitan builds on the groundbreaking features and beautiful design of OS X Yosemite. People love using their Macs, and one of the biggest reasons is the power and ease of use of OS X, said Craig Federighi, Apple's Senior Vice President of Software Engineering. El Capitan refines the Mac experience and improves performance in a lot of little ways that make a very big difference. Feedback from our OS X beta program has been incredibly positive, and we think customers are going to love their Macs even more with El Capitan.
Okay, so that was the preview. I'm going to lift my finger now.
All inboxes, search field. Double tap to edit.
And I'm nice. Back. I'm back to my inbox. So I heard the information there without actually going into the email message at all. And so it would not have changed its status from unread at this point, I don't believe. I think that I just took a peek at it. And so that's a way that one can get through their mail pretty quickly if you want to. And of course, you can use the rotor action items to delete the message if you want to do that, or you can double tap on it to open the message in the traditional way, or you can hold that, press harder on the peak, which turns into a pop, and the message just pops open. So I hope that kind of makes it clear basically how the basics of 3D touch work. That's what I was hoping to show.
Well, it certainly made sense to me, and I love that preview feature. I hadn't really had a chance to play with it. That's neat.
That's the thing right now. This is all so new for all of us that we're still trying to get it into our muscle memory that we can even do the 3D touch on these items. We've all gotten accustomed to doing them the way we did them before 3D touch came along.
It's going to be a learning curve, but I think a good one with good results in the end.
It's not going to be long before we're going to be 3D touching on our Mac screens and on our iPads. And of course, none of them have 3D touch. So we'll probably just crack our screens. And,
yep.
You know,
it'll be the excuse that I finally need. Honey, I need to buy a new Mac. I keep telling Jeremy. He says, why? Well, if I break the screen, you know.
Yeah. What?
Then I can't see it.
That doesn't matter. You cannot be a self-respecting Apple geek and have a Mac with a broken screen. So
I know.
So you will simply have to replace it.
Yes.
I can't say enough about how solid and how much I really love this hardware. And so if you're even considering upgrading your iPhone and you want some really beautiful hardware, there is no question but what they have accomplished that with the 6S and the 6S Plus.
Absolutely agreed.
And I think that the software iOS 9 really being up to speed with everything that we need it to do, honestly, is not very far behind. I think we're going to see everything smooth out here really pretty soon.
Yeah, it's coming. It's right around the corner.
I hope we've been fair and honest in kind of telling you our reactions to it all so far. I don't want anybody to leave thinking that I am all negative about it. I'm not. I'm just one of those people that have really high expectations for Apple, and I want everything to be perfect when it comes out of the gate, but I've lived long enough to know that that's not really the way software development works. These bugs appear and show up when it gets in the hands of the 13 million people who bought iPhones last weekend.
That's incredible.
That's when these things really start showing up, and
they
really have to be dealt with. I don't want to spend a lot of time on Allison, but I want to talk just a minute before we go about Apple Watch 2.0.
Sure.
Because for me, I'm enjoying Apple Watch 2.0. I have a little bit of a mixed feeling about the way one has to go about updating to...
It was a terrible update process. Let's just be real. For me, it was just awful.
Well, it's... The updating itself was not pleasant, mostly because it took a really long time, at least when I did it, and you got some erroneous information along the way. Like it would tell you, you've now installed Apple Watch version 1.1.
I threw the thing across the room when it told me that.
Which wasn't really true. You'd actually installed 2.0, but
yeah,
the wrong number. Version number was in there for some reason.
Yep.
But so I don't know if all of that is still exactly the case. I don't know if the problems are not so bad now that the rush is maybe slowed down some, and maybe it's easier to get Watch OS 2 to update. I'm not sure, although it sure seems strange to me that Apple can do an iOS 9 update so smoothly and the Watch update not be nearly as smooth.
Yeah.
But the thing that really I think is most frustrating to me about Watch OS right now is the process that has to happen when you need to move up to a different iPhone. Because what has to happen is you have to either unpair your watch from your current iPhone before you erase the data on your iPhone, which is what I did, or you have to go into the watch settings and do a factory reset on the watch. And then either way, the watch forgets everything that it ever knew about your setup and comes back up as if it were a brand new watch, just taken out of the box.
Yeah, I'm going to have to do that with the new phone now that I've restored it, because there are apps that I wasn't using that I elected not to reinstall that are still hanging out on the watch. And so the only way to really fix it is going to be to reset the whole thing again, which is such a pain, but it's just got to be that way.
Well, were you even able to pair your watch with your new phone? I wouldn't think so.
I don't think I can. No, because I know that when I have done this with various betas, back with Watch OS 1.01, I was not allowed to repair it without restoring it. So
I don't think you can.
No, I don't think so.
Because I think the problem is your watch doesn't know yet that it needs to be talking to a different phone.
Mm-hmm.
It still thinks it should expect the old phone, and it's not there anymore.
Yeah.
So the trick is to get as much of your original data from your watch as you possibly can. You need to unpair the watch, and part of what will happen as the watch gets unpaired from the phone is it will make a backup of its settings onto the phone. You then need to immediately go ahead and do an encrypted backup in iTunes of that phone so that it will also copy the watch settings into the backup. Then when you restore the watch, or you pair the watch with your new phone, you have the option then of restoring from your backup, which will be on the phone because it got copied over to the new phone when you restored the phone from the backup on the Mac. Is that confusing enough or what?
Oh, God.
Now, this can only work if you still have your old phone. If you don't have your old phone, the only choice you have is to do a factory reset on the watch and set everything up from scratch.
See, that's a little bit ridiculous.
So I don't know if there could have been another way to do it or exactly why it's this way from a technical point of view, but I'm just pointing out it is like this, and it's something that I would bet a lot of people, a lot of watch owners didn't even think of when they got their phone and then suddenly realized, wait a minute, my watch isn't working anymore.
Yeah, I guess that's the price we pay. Although we're not living on the bleeding edge anymore. I mean, this is a fairly mature product. You would think that Apple would have devised some means that's a little bit more painless now that the watch is in the hands of more people who don't necessarily all want to geek around trying to get their watch to back up.
Yeah, you would think so. And because Apple's never been a company that you had to be a geek to operate its products.
The whole point was simplicity. It just worked. And now it's not working as much. And I do think that this speaks to an overall not degrading of quality of Apple products, but they need to really think about how thin they are spreading themselves, because at this point it just feels like they're spreading themselves too thin. And if this is going to continue, then they need to hire more people. They need to be a little bit maybe less selective about who they hire, because there's lots of people who love Apple and who want to work for Apple. I think that would help to smooth out these processes a little bit more. And they need to fix what is not quite, I wouldn't say broken, but that is stuck.
Yeah, I don't know what the answers are, but I do see some of the problems that we're all facing. And I will say, though, that honestly, I was not impressed with how Watch OS 2 worked on my earlier 6 Plus. But when I restored it from a backup, paired it again with my new phone, restored it from the backup, Watch OS 2 really came to life for me. It was much more responsive. VoiceOver was much more focused on what I would have expected it to be focused on. So there was something very positive about doing that, having to do that pairing again, and kind of having the watch, I don't know, rebuild itself, even though I built it from a backup.
Well, yeah, that's good, and that's really interesting. I'm looking forward to seeing. I didn't have any problems with it on my old phone, but I'm interested in seeing if the differences, if any. I am a little bit disappointed that you still can't use the internal speaker as much as I would like to. There are times when I'm listening to music or podcasts, and I would like to just kind of have it on my watch, almost like one of the BEM speaker bands that we've heard demonstrated on a couple of different podcasts.
Do you think you'd really be able to hear it?
I'd be able to hear it well enough if I was just kind of walking around the house and needed to be away from the phone for a minute.
Yeah, I guess so.
I think it would be good enough.
I'd have to try it, see.
Yeah, certainly not for long-term use, but for the occasional trip away from the phone, I think it would be fine.
I guess that would mean that the MP3 file would need to be stored on the watch. Or are you just hoping that you could Bluetooth it somehow?
Bluetooth or Wi-Fi, because the watch depends so much on Wi-Fi. When it's on your Wi-Fi network, it's connected via Bluetooth and Wi-Fi. So yeah. Even if you're out of Bluetooth range, if I'm listening to an Overcast file, for example, it should just be able to, using the Wi-Fi stream from my phone to the watch.
It's early days, and
yeah,
we're going to see a lot of things happening, because developers have really gotten a lot more access with Watch OS 2 to what they can control and what they can do and how much they can move over to the watch and things like that.
I'm kind of like the Veruca Salt of technology. I want it now.
You want it now. And you can't have it now. Yeah. Well, anyway, I'm quite pleased actually with Watch OS 2 so far, but I don't think we've even begun to scratch the surface, as I was saying, in terms of what we're really going to see from it, because it's just brand new.
Yeah, it's going to get way better from here.
So I just want to talk a little bit about that. Not a great installation and upgrade experience. Not a great experience getting it going with the new phones, unless you know you consider having to geek around with it a great experience. And if you do, I mean, I didn't hate it. You know, it wasn't terrible for me, but I had to go through a lot of steps.
It took hours for the update for me to install. I was and I'm upset that I have to restore the whole thing and get it all set up again. So I'm a little bit more mad about the whole thing.
Yeah. Well, you won't have to update the firmware again.
No, no.
And so I think the restoration part will go reasonably quickly, except that since you're not restoring from any kind of backup, you'll have to.
I'm going to have to set it up as brand new again.
Reconfigure everything.
It's going to like suck majorly, but oh well. I should have realized that before I made that decision. So some of that is me being mad at myself, honestly.
Well,
and projecting my anger onto Apple.
Let's just be honest and admit when one gets giddy with their new iPhone, it's a little hard to think of every little detail.
Anything could happen. Yeah. Things can get crazy.
Anything could happen. I will tell you just one thing though that I experienced, which might help you a little bit. When you restore the watch, or at least when I did it from my backup, and I don't know if it'll be exactly the same for you, but during the setup process, I was offered the opportunity to set up Apple Pay on the watch.
Oh, very nice.
And I did that. But,
oh, good.
Well, you're going to not say good in a minute. I did that. No. But when I got to the Subway today and tried to pay for my sandwich, the watch told me you have no Apple Pay card set up.
Oh, no.
So I went back and reset it up using the actual watch app on the iPhone, which is there's a section there for where you can set up Apple Wallet. And you can go in and add a card there. And now when you double tap on the friends button on the watch, it shows that I have a card set up in Apple Pay.
So did you have to pay for your sandwich with your phone like a Luddite?
You know, it didn't even occur to me to pay for it with my phone. I had to pay for it with my wife.
Oh, prehistoric, man.
Prehistoric. She had to take out her debit card and pay for it.
Oh, my goodness. That's almost as bad as those paper green bills that we used to use back in the day.
I felt very much like a dinosaur. But it was just one of those things that you have to smile and work your way through. There's no other way around it. So everybody enjoy the excitement of your new phones if you got them, or the new Watch OS 2 if you got it. And if you don't have it, you know, the holidays are coming up. Get your best friend to hook you up with one of these Apple Watches or one of these new phones and have a good time. That's what I got.
Send a tweet to Santa.
Yeah, yeah. Tweet old Santa. See if you can work something out.
And for heaven's sake, if you did get one and you'd like to tell us about it, then you can feel free to send us an email. The address to which you want to do that is techdoctor@dr-carter.com. That's techdoctor@dr-carter.com.
Fabulous. You guys have a good rest of your week at whatever point you listen to this, and we will be talking to you again real soon. But for now, this is Robert, the Tech Doctor, saying so long for now.
And this is Allison Hartley, the Tech Doctor, saying bye, everyone.